This is a story about Rachel, Mother Rachel, Jacob's wife, beloved wife, in this parsha, passed away. And we're going, she lived relatively very few years with Jacob. 15 years, 14 in Haran, and another year or two. That's it. She wasn't living long with him. Then, you want, Michael, you want to read?
You know what? Hold on 1 second. We will try to make our screen, because it's kind of like we can see. Hold on. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Yeah.
I'm making it.
I got it. No. It's us. I can read it.
Okay, go ahead.
And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was still some distance to come to Ephrath, and Rachel gave birth, and her labor was difficult. It came to pass, when she had such difficulty giving birth, that the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for this one too is son for you. Don't be afraid, for this one too is son for you." I'm not sure.
For this one too is a son for you. The number two basically is also a son. This is the second son. She had Joseph, and this is Benjamin. That she told them.
I don't know
the translation of it, but it means to say, don't be afraid. This is also a son for you.
And it came to pass when her soul departed, for she died, that she named him Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the road to Ephrath, which is in Bethlehem. And Jacob erected a monument on her grave, that is a tombstone of Rachel until this day.
Then here is the sad story of Rachel. She died by giving birth. And then she still had a chance. She told that as a son, and she still gave him a name. But Jacob called him Benjamin. And then Jacob buried her on the road in the middle of nowhere, basically. And he erected a monument on her grave. And it's until today, physically, literally until today, Rachel's tomb is in Bethlehem, and thousands of Jews go there. I was there maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I was there as a child once. Then I was never there, even I went to Israel many times. And then I went with my younger son, Meir, and he wanted to go there. And I discovered how close it is to Jerusalem. It's literally very close. And there is an old story how really it's in Bethlehem. Bethlehem was given over to the Palestinians. But right before they were made the Oslo Agreement in 1993, something like this, they came, two Knesset members, religious Knesset members, came to Rabin, and they told them, "Rabin, what do you mean? How could you give the cave of the Rachel Stone tomb to the Palestinians? The Jews go there to pray so many times, so much." He said, then finally, one of the Knesset members, his name was Porush, he got up and he started to cry, and he told Rabin, "The Jewish people will never forgive you if you take away from them Rachel's tomb, their mother." And the tears went on Rabin's suit. And Rabin got very emotional about it. And he told him, "Give me a minute." He picked up the phone and he told Peres, "We need to talk about Rachel's tomb." And this piece stayed within the Jew, for the, in the, under Israeli control. And they made a special road that has like a wall from both sides. It's from all around, it's occupied territories. It's their territories, controlled by Palestinians. But this road takes you straight to the grave and straight out. It's 2 miles, 3 miles, nothing. But there's an old wall from both sides, and you go there. And I went there in the middle of the summer, in a regular day, in the afternoon. It was probably 1,000 people there. I was shocked how many people were there.
Can I ask a question, Rabbi? I mean, like, something was happening during Jewish history, everything, that it has some kind of special deep meaning. Is Rachel's death, why she died? I mean, is it something tells us that mother just give everything that she had for the new generation, for the son, or it's something else besides this?
First of all, this, yes, and this is the whole talk going to be about. How Rachel sacrificed everything for the Jewish people, not only for her own son, but the future generations. Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what it's all about. Yes. Now we'll read source number two. Olga, you want to read?
Mm-hmm. And when the time approached for Israel, Jacob to die, he summoned his son Joseph and said to him, "Do me this favor. Place your hand under my thigh as a pledge of your steadfast loyalty. Please do not bury me in Egypt. When I lie down with my fathers, take me up from Egypt and bury me in their burial place." He replied, "I will do as you have spoken." And he said, "Swear to me." And he swore to him. Then Israel Jacob bowed at the head of the bed.
Okay, what he says is like this. Jacob is dying. Before he's dying, it's already Parshat Vayechi, the last parsha of the book of Genesis. And before he died, he called his son Joseph. Jacob is in Egypt at this point. Joseph is the ruler of Egypt. And Jacob, before he dies, he knew that to take him from Egypt to Israel is not going to be easy. Pharaoh was going to be insulted. You take him. You came here. I gave you life. I saved you from a famine. And now Egypt is not good enough for you to be buried in Egypt. You have to be buried in Israel. Where is your loyalty to the country? Are you loyal citizens or not? What is this? We are not kosher enough for you to be buried there? Then no. Jacob knew it's going to be a very hard thing. Then he called Joseph, because Joseph is the ruler. And he told him, "I need you to swear to me," because he knew that if it's not going to be an oath, it will be such pressure from Pharaoh that Joseph will not be able to find the strength to do it. Told him, "I want you to swear to me that Joseph cannot get himself out of it." He says, "Take me. I don't want to be buried in Egypt. I want to be buried in Israel. And not just buried in Israel. I want to be buried." He wants to be buried with his parents. Abraham and Isaac, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah were buried in the cave of Machpelah in Hebron. He says, "I want you to take me to Hebron to be buried there." It's one thing not to be buried in Egypt, but even in Israel, it was very specific that he wants to be buried with his parents. That's what he told. Then, okay. And then, but Jacob had a problem here. He's asking for men to be buried in Egypt, to be buried in Israel, in Hebron. But he knows that Joseph is having a question. A very, very question. You know, some questions, you know, the elephant in the room, you don't even have to say the question. There was an elephant in the room. What was the elephant in the room? He buried his mother, Joseph's mother, Rachel, on the road, 20 minutes drive from Hebron. Then the elephant in the room is, you are asking me to take you from Egypt all the way to Hebron to be buried in the cave of Machpelah. And you didn't do it for your beloved wife, for my mother, 20 minutes drive, would be a few hours in a camel. He couldn't take her to be buried in Hebron. Why you didn't bury her in Hebron? Joseph did not ask anything. But Jacob knew that this is the question that he's asking without asking. Mary, you want to read source number three?
"For me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died in the land of Canaan. On the way, while still some distance short of Ephrat, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrat, which is Bethlehem." Mm-hmm. I buried her
that's,
there.
That's the text. Now Rashi says what was going on there.
I buried her there. I didn't even take her to Bethlehem to bring her into the land, and I know that you hold it against me. But you should know that I buried her there by divine command, so that she would be of assistance to her children.
It says something very interesting here. Jacob is basically telling Joseph, don't worry. I buried her not because I was lazy to take her to the cave of Machpelah, because God wanted me to bury her on the road. And Rashi says what happened later in history on the road. He should be an assistant for the children. What kind of an assistant? Continue. When Nebuzaradan?
When Nebuzaradan exiles them and they pass by there, Rachel will emerge from her grave and weep and beg mercy for them.
Nebuzaradan was the story of the destruction of the first temple. The Jewish people were exiled. And when they were exiled by the Babylonians, they told their captors please, we want to stop by, it's on the road, we want to stop by, it's Rachel's gravestone, and pray, and graveside, and pray for us. And they came, and they prayed for Rachel, told Rachel, go to God and plea on our behalf. And Rachel did it. As it is said, continue.
As it is said, a voice is heard on high, Rachel is weeping for her children. And God answers her, there is reward for your work, says the Lord, and the children shall return to their own border.
That is a, there is a prophecy that says a voice was heard in Ramah, Rachel is crying for weeping for her children. And God promised her, Rachel, more than anybody else, that he will bring them, the Jewish people, back to Israel one day. Now, what happened there? What's this voice heard in Ramah? There is something unbelievable here. There is a prophecy in the book of Jeremiah, as you're going to read in the next source. You see, you need to understand something very interesting. Anytime in the Bible, when we have somebody, we read about Abraham. We read the story of Abraham. Abraham passes away and finished. Then we move on to Isaac. Isaac passes away. We move on to Jacob and so on. The moment the person passed away, there is nothing written later about him as a story that happened to him because he died. That's it. With one exception, Rachel. Jeremiah lived 1,000 years after Rachel. Yeah, 1,000 years. Maybe more. 1,000 years after Rachel. Yeah, probably. It was the first destruction. It was 800 years. Over 1,000 years. And he suddenly, in the middle of the prophecy of Jeremiah, he speaks about Rachel like she's alive. What's going on? Now Rachel is already dead for 1,000 years. What's going on here? She passed away so long ago. The only person in the Bible that we tell a story about him 1,000 years after he passed away. There's no story about Abraham. Abraham went and he did this and God told him nothing. Then let's read now the story, how it's written in the book of Jeremiah and what happened really there. Oleg, you want to read?
So says God, a voice is heard on high, lamentation, bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children. She refuses to be comforted for her children, whether or not.
She's crying in Ramah. Ramah means loud, in Anai, an Anai mountain, or Anai crying. Lamentation, bitter weeping. Rachel cries for her children, and she refused to be comforted because she lost her children because they're gone, so to speak. So says God. God answers her.
Refrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears. For there is reward for your work, says God, and they shall come back from the land of the enemy.
God is promising, don't cry. All stop crying, all you crying, because there is reward for your action. Soon we're going to see what are the actions she did. Not just for your crying, for your action. And you will come back and your kids will be returning from the land of the enemy. And then he continues, the prophet continues what God said to Rachel, continue.
And there is hope for your future, says God. And the children return to their own border.
And there is hope for your future. Don't give up. One day the Jewish people will come back to the land of Israel. This prayer became such a part of Jewish history, tradition. Rosh Hashanah, the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we read this in the Haftorah from Rosh Hashanah. Because one of the, that's written that Rachel was, her prayers were answered on Rosh Hashanah for having the child Joseph. Then this prayer, this is the way we remember Rachel and Rosh Hashanah, that we read this after about here. And why we read it? We tell every Jew comes Rosh Hashanah to Shul, don't worry. One day the Jewish people will come back to the land of Israel. And part of it, we are already in the land of Israel. The Jewish people are already now in Israel. We came back from the land of the enemy. And this is Rachel, 1,000 years after she died. She cried to God. She had a conversation with God on behalf of the Jewish kids. It's not recorded about anybody else in the Bible. Okay, Michael, you want to continue? Here is the Midrash that tells us what happened in this story from Jeremiah.
The Midrash Agada states that the patriarch or the matriarch went to appease God for the sin of Menashe, who placed an idol in the temple, but he was not appeased.
Basically, the Medrash says why God destroyed the temple. Menashe was the son of Chizkiyahu. I think it's the son of King Chizkiyahu. Father or the son? I think it was the son. Yeah. And he put an idol inside the temple. And God was very upset. That was the cause of the destruction of the temple. Later. Then all the forefathers, the Medrash goes in long details. Then when the destruction of the temple took place, the prophet Jeremiah went to the Jordan, bank of the Jordan River. And he said, Moses, Moses, why your children are being exiled and you don't do anything? Then the Medrash says, Moses went to the cave of Hebron, to the gravesite of the forefathers. And he says, your children are being exiled from the land of Israel and you say nothing? And the Medrash continues, Abraham went and prayed to God and says, God, maybe do it for me. I was ready to sacrifice my son Isaac for my merit, save the children. God didn't accept it. Then Isaac came and he said to God, God, do it for me. I was ready to be sacrificed myself. God did not accept it. Then Jacob came and he said to God, look, I was 22 years suffering by Laban. Day and night, I didn't have a day, I didn't have a night. I suffered to establish the Jewish people. Do it for me. Nothing. Then came Rachel. Here comes them. Here the Rashi brings from the Medrash only the piece about Rachel. Continue. Rachel entered
and stated before him, Master of the universe, whose mercy is greater, your mercy or a mercy of the flesh and blood person, you must admit that your mercy is greater. How did I not bring my rival into my house? For all the work that Jacob worked for my father, he worked only for me. When I came to enter the nuptial canopy, the nuptial canopy, they brought my sister, and it was not enough that I kept my silence, but I gave her my password. You too, if your children have brought your rival into your house, keep your silence for them.
Okay, what he says here is very interesting. Rachel turned to God, he says, who has more mercy, a human being or God? For sure, God. Look what I did for my sister. When your father Laban replaced by the wedding night, Rachel was supposed to marry Jacob, as you learned last week's parsha, right? And he replaced Leah with Rachel. Not only Rachel didn't go to Jacob to tell him what is happening, more than that, they had a password, they had a code. What are they going to say if to know for sure that's Rachel? Because Jacob was suspecting his future father-in-law that he's capable to do such a thing. Then he says, he gave her a code. What was the code? The code is she should say that she went to the mikveh. Then he said, you can, Rachel told Leah before the chuppah, go to the mikveh because this is going to be the code. She gave ear code to your sister, a password. Says, if I gave, then what are you getting so upset that they put your rivalry? What's an idol? An idol is somebody stand of God. An idol is like another man for the Jewish people. And why are you getting so upset if you put a rivalry of you in my room instead of you? I gave up on my right to my husband. You should give up also. You should forgive them. That's what she said. Here is what God answered them. To finish this paragraph, God said to her,
you have defended them well. There is rewards for your deed and for your righteousness that you gave over your password to your sister.
God told her, your prayers will be accepted. Abraham is not good enough. Abraham said he was ready to sacrifice Isaac. That was not good enough. Isaac said he was ready to sacrifice himself. Not good enough. Jacob's 22 years suffering, not good enough. What works? Rachel's prayer were accepted more than all of them. Then the real question is, why Rachel's prayer were accepted more than anybody else? What was about Rachel that her prayer was working more than anybody else? That's the real question. And that's what the Rebbe is going to discuss. Oh, yeah, she gave her sister, she gave up her husband. Yeah, that's nice. But to say that this is less than being ready to sacrifice your own son?
Yeah.
Obviously, there is something more that speaks about Rachel. That's what you're trying to understand. Now comes the Rebbe's talk. Barry, you want to continue? Now that we know the story about the background, we can appreciate the Rebbe's talk. I was there when the Rebbe gave the speech, and it was a very, very emotional talk. I don't hear you, Barry.
Barry, you're on mute.
Sorry. Parsha Vayechi. Vayechi?
Yeah, Vayechi.
Vayechi. Describes Jacob's conversation with Joseph regarding the burial place of his mother, Rachel. As for me, Jacob said, when I came from Padan, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrat, which is Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a contradiction. Jacob is requesting that Joseph bring his body from Egypt to Canaan for burial. Why would he mention that he didn't do so for Rachel, Joseph's mother?
In the same conversation, I buried your mother in Bethlehem. You're asking me, don't mention it if you have nothing good to say. Rashi explains. Okay, go ahead, continue.
Rashi explains that Jacob's intention was to negate this argument. This was his point. I burden you to bury me in Canaan. Well, I did not do so to your mother, for she died close to Bethlehem, and I buried her there. I didn't even take her to Bethlehem to bring her into the land. There is a separate discussion about the meaning of these words, and I know that you hold it against me, but you should know that I buried her there by divine command, so that she would be of assistance to her children. When Nebuzaradan exiles them and they pass by there, Rachel will emerge from her grave and weep and beg mercy for them. As it is said, a voice is heard on high. Rachel is weeping for her children, and God answers her, there is reward for your work, says God, and the children shall return to their own border.
That's basically what we learned in the sources. That's the beginning of the discussion. Okay, Oleg, you want to continue?
This tells us that redemption comes through the intercession of Rachel. In the words of the verse, there is a reward for your work, says God, and the children shall return to their own border.
Basically, we need a tear to be buried there because redemption for the old Jewish people came because of Rachel. She, because of her conversation with God. The Medrash continue.
The Medrash bring more details. The prophet Jeremiah went to call Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses to appease God. The patriarchs and the
matriarchs
went to appease God, but he was not appeased. Then Rachel entered and stated before him, Master of the universe, God mercy was aroused, and he said to her, for you, Rachel, I will return them to their home. As the verse says, a voice is heard on high, Rachel crying for her children. There is reward for your deed, and the sons will return to their borders. Clearly, it was Rachel in whose merit God promised to return the Jewish people to their homeland.
Then it was because of Rachel. Then the Jewish people, the matriarchs, the patriarchs, everybody said something. Nothing worked. It was Rachel who got the promise that one day the Jewish people will return back to Israel. Continue. We still need to understand.
We still need to understand. How did Jacob negate Joseph's argument by explaining Rachel's part in the salvation from
Nebuzaradan?
Why should Rachel need to suffer because of that situation?
What is Jacob telling Joseph? You know why I buried there? It was from God. Because one day the Jewish people will need her. What do you mean? Why you didn't bury yourself there? Why Rachel? What you're going to be buried in the cave of Machpelah very nicely. My mother, you sacrificed to put her on the road. That's the question. You're telling me that in 1,000 years from now, will be children. They will be exiled. Why they're exiled? Because they're bad guys. And Rachel is to be buried forever and ever in outside of the cave of Machpelah with her husband, away from her husband, away from Abraham and Isaac, and Rebecca and Sarah, just because of these children. Why Rachel? You know the question in America, why me? That was the question. Why my mother? Okay, Michael, please stay, continue.
Rachel's joy. The explanation is straightforward. Because Rachel knew that she would be of assistance to her children on the way to exile, she was not upset about her burial on the roadside. To the contrary, the fact that she could be of assistance to her children brought her joy, knowing that God's promise of redemption will come through her.
The Rebbe said like this, Rachel did not live for herself. Rachel was a true Jewish mother. When she knew, if you would ask her today, would you be buried? You would be willingly to be buried on the road, to be the person that will bring the redemption, the promise of redemption for the Jewish people? She'd say, absolutely. I'm ready to sacrifice all my burial history just for the bring to be the one that causes God the promise to bring the to make the promise that the Jewish people come back to the land of Israel. Rachel was not living for herself. Her whole essence in life was her children. And that's why she's called the mother of the Jewish people. Even that biologically she was just the mother of two tribes. But her whole life was in her whole death, her whole history, her whole being was dedicated to the Jewish people. Continue.
Obviously, Rachel's joy at the prospect of helping her children negated Joseph's complaint against his father, because he sought only his mother's well-being and satisfaction. Once Jacob explained that Rachel's burial on the road to Ephrat was for her own good, to be the assistance to her children, he was appeased.
He basically told them, I didn't hurt her. I didn't punish her. I did her something that she would appreciate and would be very proud, that she will be the person who is going to get from God the promise. Olga, you want to continue?
This teaches us an amazing lesson about our matriarch Rachel. She was willing to forego the merit of burial in the cave of Machpelah, and joyfully so, all in order to come to her children's side in their time of need. Think about it. Rachel surely appreciated Jacob's greatness, especially according to Rashi's teachings that the matriarchs were all prophetesses, and that their level of prophecy was superior to the prophecy of Abraham. She therefore surely understood the privilege of being buried next to Jacob, and especially in the cave of Machpelah, the burial place of Isaac and Rebekah, Abraham and Sarah, and Adam and Eve. That being
the case,
she no doubt desired to be buried in the cave of Machpelah with her husband Jacob.
Nonetheless,
knowing that a day would come and Nevuzradan will exile her children from the land of Israel, Rachel gave up on the merit to be buried with Jacob at the cave of Machpelah and preferred burial in the on the road to Ephrat to be of assistance to her children when Nebuzaradan exiles them. When they pass by there, Rachel will emerge from her grave and weep and beg mercy for them, and God will answer. The son will return to their borders.
Rachel, what the Rebbe is pointing out here, Rachel knows how important is it to be buried next to Jacob. She appreciated Jacob more than anybody else of us. And still, because she knew that in 1,000 years, what type of children will be there? As I mentioned before, children who are sinners, that's what they were exiled, by whom by Nebuzaradan, was a Babylonian general who came to destroy the temple and took the Jews to exile. But because she knew that there'll be bad children, she was such a strong mother. And children, 1,000 years from here, not the children, the physical, biological children, not grandchildren, not great-grandchildren, descendants of her in 1,000 years. It was more important to be an assistant for your child, for your descendants, than being buried next to Jacob throughout history. Okay, Barry, want to continue?
Well, we see here the profound dedication of Rachel and her care for her children. On one hand is the opportunity to be buried in the cave of Machpelah together with Jacob for hundreds and thousands of years. On the other hand are her children many generations into the future who will be in such a low spiritual state that will be forced into exile. We were exiled due to our sins. Nebuzaradan has no personal power over the Jewish people. The fact that he exiled them was because they were deserving of exile.
Because of God. God has made it because they deserve the exile. Nonetheless,
for the sake of those children who sinned and were being exiled, Rachel relinquishes her right to burial in the cave of Machpelah together with Jacob for hundreds and thousands of years, as long as she can be of assistance to her children. In fact, how could she possibly rest peacefully at the cave of Machpelah while her children are suffering in exile?
She wouldn't want to be in the cave of Machpelah if she wouldn't be enjoying to rest there if she know that she can be a help for her children and she was not there to help them. Okay, Oleg, you want to continue?
Yep. In fact, her burial there is why she merited to bring about God's promise. The sons will return to their borders.
Here comes the point. Why was her prayers, why was her argument with God was accepted more than any other of the patriarchs and matriarchs? Continue.
Jacob went to rest in the cave of Machpelah together with the rest of the patriarch and matriarch. But Rachel, our mother, couldn't bring herself to rest peacefully in the cave of Machpelah. She remained on the roadside on the way to the flood to stand guard and assist her children as they went into exile. Therefore, she was
the one
to arouse God's mercy. She told God, who has greeted mercy.
Let's stop right here. Here is the point. The point is like this. It's not what who say, not what you say, it's who says it. You know, when you come and you ask, you when a child in school comes to the teacher and says, you know, the other student did bad, give him a better grade, you know, he tried so hard. Why should the teacher listen? What if the student come and say, listen, I was studying with you for the test so many hours. I tried to help him. Please help her too. That's a different discussion. Understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When you come, let's say I'll give you an example from a fundraiser. You come to another person, I tell them, you know, we have a very important cause. This person is poor. Would you give a donation? Says, I'm not interested. But if you come and you tell them, look, I gave a donation. I gave $1,000. I'm asking for you for $100. That's a different discussion. I sacrificed. I did something. Now I'm asking from you to do. What is happening here is, Rachel, it's not what she said, because I was giving the good to my sister. Rachel said, because Rachel did, her actions spoke louder than her words. She was ready to be buried on the road forever, just to be there to help the children. Then when she comes and speaks to God, God listens. Because she made a sacrifice. She paid, she walked the walk. She didn't just talk the talk. She went the extra mile. She sacrificed. Therefore, when she came to God, God says, okay, I'm ready to listen to you because you sacrificed. You didn't. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they also knew that one day their children will need mercy. But they went very nicely to be buried in Hebron, in cave of Machpelah, very nicely. They weren't worried. They were not ready to give up on their burial site for the sake of the children from 1,000 years later. But Rachel, couldn't, she gave up on everything. She wasn't buried with her husband, You know, was buried with her husband. The rival. Leah was buried with her husband. She was buried in the middle of the road for what? For these children. That's why when she came and she spoke to God, it was a different discussion. It's not what you say, it's what you do. Continue.
Now I was reading. Who has greater mercy? You or a person of flesh and blood? And immediately the midrash writes, God mercy was aroused, but he said to her, for you, Rachel, I'll return them to their home, and the sons will return to their borders.
Okay. Then what it says here, and now we're going to read it in a more clear way, a more sharp point. Michael, you want to read it?
Rachel was Akeret Habayit, the mainstay of the home.
She was Akeret Habayit, the Jewish woman, is the mainstay of the home. She's the foundation of the home. She's the backbone. Men are good for nothing. The mother of the house, she keeps the whole place going. And that's what he says. She was, Rachel is called Akeret Habayit, the foundation of the home, the mainstay of the home. She's everything. If you think about it, when Rachel died, the whole house of Jacob fell apart. Joseph was sold. As long as Rachel was alive, this whole place worked. Even there were a few mothers. There were four women. Rachel was the foundation of the house. Jacob married the family because of Rachel. It was all because of Rachel. And if Rachel would stay alive, Joseph would never be sold. It would never happen. Rachel was everything. Then she was willing, continue.
She was willing to forego her personal merit of burial in the cave of Machpelah to be of help to her children, descendants who lived many generations later, and descendants who were deserving of exile. For the sake of those sinful, exiled children, she was willing to forego her burial in the cave of Machpelah, together with Jacob, her husband, for thousands of years, to be of assistance to her children. Therefore, her prayers on their behalf were successful, and God promised her the children will return to their borders. She disregarded her children's spiritual state and made a sacrifice for them because they have essential connection to them. Therefore, she channeled God's blessing measure for measure. God promised that the children will return to their borders despite the fact that they were deserved to be exiled, by virtue of our essential connection to him as his children. Therefore, they will be returned to their land with the true and complete redemption speedily in our day.
Here the Rebbe points out the concept of measure for measure. When I'm ready to sacrifice for another Jew, when I come to God and says, God, you do it too, God listens, because I made my sacrifice. If I'm not ready to make a sacrifice, who am I to pray on behalf of another person? If I come to somebody and says, I made a donation, now I want you to do. Now you're talking. That's measure for measure. But if I'm not ready to do anything, I'm asking another person to make sacrifices. That's a chutzpah. And that's what the Rebbe pointed out about Rachel. It's not what she said. It's who says it. You know, the same things can be said, the same sermon can be said by two people. One person had a very nice life, and the other person came out from the gulags in Russia and suffered for 20 years, and he was sacrificing his life for Judaism. When he gets up and he says the same word, it's a different story. Everybody listens. Or you look at, let's say, a war hero who speaks on behalf of the country, and he gets up and he says, guys, I want you to make a sacrifice for the country. He says that. You're listening. This guy can talk. He has the right to talk. He sacrificed for his country. If somebody go, never did anything for anybody else, I want you to sacrifice. What a chutzpah. It's like you see, for every time you hear another governor, another politician who says, wear the mask. Don't go to parties. Don't go for Thanksgiving dinners. But they don't do it. And they are discovered in a... What is this? But if you are ready to sacrifice, you show an example, then your words will be heard. People will respect you. And they say, he's showing an example. Then really, the main message is here, it's all about an example. It's all about making your own sacrifice before you demand from other people. And this is true about your own children. You know, I spoke about it this morning with somebody. It's not what you tell your children. Every time people tell me, I told my children all the time to do this. I told my children this. Don't tell your children anything. They don't even listen. They don't even hear you. Be an example. Make a sacrifice. We want to ask our children to make a sacrifice, let's say to marry Jews. They never saw you making any sacrifices for Judaism. You're asking from them to make the ultimate sacrifice? When I didn't make my own sacrifice, how could I ask them to do? I was not ready to make a sacrifice to give up on a Friday night game for a Friday night dinner. And I'm asking from them to make the ultimate sacrifice. They fell in love with a non-Jewish boy or girl to give up on the love of their life for Judaism when they never saw the parent making a real sacrifice of Judaism. They'll never listen to you. So you're a big talker. You just talk. You talk big. But if you said, look, you don't even have to say it, but they see that you said made sacrifices. You were involved in Judaism. You went to shul. You learned Torah. You made choices. But you prioritized things. They saw that you're making sacrifice. That Judaism is important to you. Then you tell them, guys, I cannot see you marrying this person or doing this kind of thing. They know that you mean business. You did it. That's what it's all about. It's about making sacrifices. It's not what you say. It's what you do. I mentioned a few times, Miriam was once speaking at the women's convention from Chabad Rebbetzins. Like there was Chabad rabbis, there is a big convention for women. And they asked her to speak how to raise Hasidic children. And she had, like it was a session. A few hundred ladies came in and she told them, okay, let's make a list. She took out a pen and a paper. She said, what do you want your children to do? And one lady says, I want my children should say the morning prayers right before when you wake up. Nicely and wash their hands. Okay, she wrote it down. The other one says, I want them to be nice to their parents. Number three was, I want them to do this thing, this meets. Everyone had his wish list, what they want the children to do. And Miriam told them, take a list, take a paper, make a list what you want your children to do, hang it up on your refrigerator, and start to do it yourself. They were not, they didn't appreciate this message. They were ready to kill, right? I would say it. Oh, yeah. Everybody says, do it yourself. Sure, it's much easier to tell the children to do than do it yourself. But if you are not going to do it, your children are for sure not going to do it. If you do it, maybe your children will do it. If I don't do it, for sure the children will not do it. The children are always a little less than me, not more. Don't expect them to be more righteous than you. It has to be something that's important to you. If it's not important to you, it's not going to be important to the children. And this is the message from Rachel. And why the Rebbe spoke about it? And why he was so emotional about it? Because that was the Rebbe. His whole life was dedicated for the Jewish people. He never gave time to himself. 4 years, the Rebbe never left his office for a vacation. He was every day came to his office. Shabbos, weekday, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Every day, snowstorm, the biggest heat wave. When he was sick, when he was healthy, every day, 40 years, he came to his office. He was available for his people every day of the year. He never left New York. He used to go only to visit his father-in-law's gravesite for a few hours and coming back. And what he did, his father-in-law's gravesite? Reading all the letters, and praying for the people. Then, you know, I mean, I go to the oil now. Some of you were there. To stay an hour, it's hard. To stay in the cold weather, hours, used to stand 4 or 5 hours. Or used to stand in the very heat. I remember the Rebbe going to the oil on a snowstorm, traveling. And his wife tried to stop him, maybe don't go today. He went to the oil. I remember the car driving out, a terrible snowstorm, the Rebbe went to the oil. And it was a little leader next to him. It was a joke. And he stood for hours. I was there when he was 87, 88, 89, 86, 85. And then in the heat, it was very hot in New York in July and August, terribly. He used to stand hours and hours praying for his people. Then the Rebbe was a person who didn't talk. How he inspired all the young Chabad rabbis to go to China and to go to Alaska to be rabbis. It's not by what he said, and by his example. His whole life is dedicated to others. And the Rebbe pointed out about Rachel. Rachel's word worked by God, not because what she said. Oh, my sister, I gave up my marriage to my sister. Abraham is saying, I gave up my son. Even bigger. But then it came to this. Abraham also made big sacrifices. I want to make a big point. It's not that Abraham did not make sacrifices, but he didn't make sacrifices for these children who are going to be exiled in 1,000 years. He made sacrifices for God, but he didn't think about these children. They will be 1,000 years from now, and they will be sinning. And for these children, he's ready to be buried on the road, and then they will go on the road to Babylon. They will stop and cry there, and she will go out of her grave and pray to God. Abraham didn't do it. Then when Abraham came to speak about the case of these children, basically God is asking him, you invested anything in these children? You cared? What you did for these children? You're asking for me to do for these children? What have you done for these children? And that's why he didn't have a good answer. But then Rachel came and said, I did for these children. I made a sacrifice. That's why God listens about these children. Then that's what is unique here, and that's the lesson to us. Then we should always not only expect from God to help other people, we should help other people. And then when I pray to God, I says, God, I did everything that I could do. Now it's in your hand. Now you do it.
Rabbi, a question. When Jacob answering to Joseph, and he's saying, hey, here's the answer on your question you have probably in the mind that why I didn't bury her there, because she was that's what we just discussing here. But the question is, when she gave birth and she was dying, did she know of this prophecy of her role in the future? I mean,
physically, no. But she was, you see, 1,000 years later, she's talking to God and it's recorded. The life is not just your body, it's your soul. Put it this way, if he would ask Rachel before she died, are you ready to be buried there? She would say yes. That's really what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm asking because it's a lot of examples in the history of what we're learning that God had directly talked to this person and telling the role and why it's happening and kind of just made them to do it or made them feel kind of like their role. But nowhere here was says that she kind of knew of her future, for the future generation, her role.
You're right. She did not know. But 1,000 years later, when the Jewish children actually passed by and she stood up and cried for them, she, with her crying, made the statement that she was very happy that she was buried. You understand what I'm saying? Later behavior proved that she agreed with it. You know, there is an example when you can convert a little child to Judaism, then you have to see if he denies Judaism by his bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, he's not Jewish, that the conversion was nullified. But if he makes a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah, his action, and he continues Judaism, that's a proof that what they did with him when he was a child, he agreed with it. You understand what I'm saying? The same thing is here. That's it. 1,000 years later, she was ready. She got up and she cried, and she got God's promise to bring the children back. Is the loudest statement that she was happy that she was buried. You see, in the big picture, in the final analysis, the question is not exactly what hour of the day she knew about it. Understand? Could be she didn't know. But if you would ask her the day she died, before she died, your children will be there in 1,000 years. Would you be ready to be buried? The answer would be yes. That's what he said. Because her action later showed it. and erections before that she was, she told Jacob, I want children, and every all her life was dedicated for the children. Rachel was married to have children. You see, Leah was having children to be married. Leah loved Jacob, and she, every child she had, she said, oh, now my husband will love me. In this parsha we read, it was last week's parsha. She said, oh, I was born Reuven, now my husband will see that I gave him birth. God saw my pain and my husband will love me. Shimon, God heard my pain, and so on and on. All the purpose of her children was to be married. Rachel, she was married for the sake of having children. She told Jacob, if I don't have children, I'm dead. She wanted children. You don't see, she said, oh, I want to be married to you. She wanted to have children. That was your most important thing. Your main purpose of your life was to have children. And that's why she's called Akeret Abay, the mainstay of the house, because she was, everything was here about having children. She's the example, and you know, we see later in Jewish history, when Ruth is a story in the, there is a called the Book of Ruth, and Ruth is a non-Jewish convert, a Moabite convert, converted to the Jewish people. That the bathing, when they convert her, they tell her that the elders say, may you be like Rachel and Leah who build the people of Israel. And they say Rachel before Leah. Even Leah had six sons and one daughter. Rachel had only two children. But Rachel became the mother of the Jewish people, because it's not about biologically how many children you have. It's what are you ready to do for these children. And Rachel, more than any other Jewish mother, was ready to sacrifice her children. That's why she's called the mother of the Jewish people. That's the story, and the lesson to us is that every one of us should learn from Rachel to make some sacrifices. We're not asking to be buried for thousands of years in the middle of nowhere. We're not asking to make huge sacrifices. And not only the women should make sacrifices, like some men look at their wives and they're expecting from them sacrifices.
Let's leave it just there. Women, that's all.
It's also the men. It's a message to the Rebbe. When the Rebbe spoke about that, he didn't speak just to the women. The shul was full of men. He was speaking to, you know, the Rebbe used to say every time when he speaks about somebody, everybody looks at the other guy and tells them, you hear what the Rebbe said? Like, you have to do it, not me, him. The Rebbe says, instead of looking at somebody else, look at yourself and say, you hear? Tell it to yourself. We are all good to, Miriam tells me many times, I give such good speeches, I should try to apply some of the speeches to myself, that would be much better. Then that's the hard part, you know, doing it is hard. Preaching is very easy. There is many preachers on television preaching and preaching and preaching. It's doing it. All right, that's complicated. In any case, thank you guys for joining. Especially from Florida.
And thank you.
We'll see all of you next Sunday, God willing.
Absolutely.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks. Bye-bye.